I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's been entirely too long since we've had a conversation with Nancy Pearl. Nancy is terrific. She's the author of Book Lust, Book Lust to Go, Book Lust Journal, Book Crush for kids and teens, recommended reading for every mood, moment, and interest, Book Crush Journal. She is a librarian and has received so many awards, Librarian of the Year Award from the Library Journal, a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association. She developed that program, which I thought was a terrific idea. If all of Seattle, which is where she lives, read the same book. She is a former executive director of the Washington Center for the Book. And, she's received other awards that are terrific, too. I just can't mention all of them. She's a frequent commentator on National Public Radio. And lo and behold, she has presented to us 14 books, her favorite. Most people have one favorite book of the year, but Nancy, of course, has 14. And I looked into each of these books and must say that I haven't read any of them, which is because I read a lot of books. But so now I have all these books to read when I have a little bit of time off over the holidays. And it's a wonderful list because she reads widely. She reads history and mystery and science fiction and children's books and young adult books. And so she can recommend all kinds of books. And I want to get through all 14, if we can, on her list for you to join our conversation with Nancy, who is in the studios of KUOW Seattle today. Here's how you reach us: 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Nancy Pearl, it's been too long.
It has, Kathleen. I'm so happy to be with you again.
I'm so happy to be with you, but I'm embarrassed to say I got this wonderful list and I was looking all of them up over the weekend and I haven't read any of them, Nancy. I feel like I've missed a whole year of reading.
Well, you know, that's what I aim for. I really want. I always feel like my niche in the world of book reviewing or book recommendations is to really focus on those books that people might not find on the front table of their local bookstore. And I'm always so thrilled when somebody who is a real reader like you are can say something like that.
Well, I'm really happy with your list. Why don't we start with the one that's number one? There are two books, one's fiction and one is nonfiction. I wonder if this was the year for starting to really think deeply about Vietnam, but there are two books about Vietnam on your list.
Yes, and I think that those two books are probably, if I had to choose one fiction and one nonfiction, these would be the two books that I would pick as my favorite books of the year.
Ooh.
Yeah. For several reasons, and those reasons are similar. So the nonfiction is called American Reckoning, The Vietnam War and Our National Identity by a professor of history at one of the University of Massachusetts colleges. And this is a book. Chris Appy, the author of the book, has really spent his career writing about different aspects of America's involvement in Vietnam. This one is a little bit different, and it's a book that talks about or that makes a case for the myth of American exceptionalism and how so much of our both foreign and domestic policy is based on this deep, you know, deeply rooted belief that we have that whatever we do is right because we have good and God on our side.
Mm-hmm.
He starts this approach by talking going back to the 1930s and the 1940s and systematically laying out a case for how our government, our national government, has lied to the American people about what we were doing and why, and that this all culminated or all sort of came to fruition with Vietnam. And I thought this was, first of all, it was a book where I thought I knew something about the subject, and certainly, you know, I was a history major, Kathleen. I have a master's degree in history, and I'm interested in current events and you know, politics, but seeing it the way he has presented it, one incident after another, was pretty startling. And I think that this is an important book for people to read because it gives us context for the present. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the benefit of history, is that, you know, it's not that we're not going to repeat our past mistakes, but if we read history now, it helps us understand how we got to where we are.
Mm, interesting. And he, one review, I don't know where these were from, I just wrote down some notes. One of the reviewers I was reading yesterday said, before Vietnam, we accepted it all. There hadn't been Watergate, no fake WMDs. You finish with a feeling the author wishes the lessons of Vietnam would be for the American people to rise up and shout, we won't be fooled again. But you close the book sharing his thought, we have and we will, which is kind of discouraging.
Yes. Yeah, I you know, it's not a hopeful book particularly, but it's a book I think that I want to emphasize, I really want to emphasize, this is such an accessible book. Mm-hmm. This is not a scholarly approach. This is a book as though you were sitting with somebody who knows a lot and is quite intelligent, and he's just talking to you about things that have happened in the past and how that has had an impact on where we are now. Mm.
He would be a great interview. We should have that on our show too, right?
I think I would, yes.
Yes.
Yes. And if you do interview him, please let me know, because I would love to listen to that.
All right. The other one, I know you like first novels. This is a first novel,
yes.
The Sympathizer, from a young man born in Vietnam but raised in America.
Yes, and now a professor of English or creative writing at a college in California. It's The Sympathizer by Viet Thanh Nguyen. And it is, as you said, a first novel, and I am uncommonly fond of first novels. But this one just absolutely blew me away. It's the story, it's set during the Vietnam, it begins at the very end of America's involvement in Vietnam. It opens on the day that the helicopters are taking off from the American embassy, really getting out everybody that they possibly could, including the Vietnamese who had helped, who had been assistants, aides, translators, whatever, for the American military or the American presence in Vietnam. And the main character is an aide to a high-ranking officer in the South Vietnamese Army. He gets out along with his boss. But what we learn very early is that all the time he was an assistant and helping this this general or colonel in the South Vietnamese Army, he has been a spy for the North Vietnamese. And he goes to America. They all go to America, and we get a very moving section on what it's like to be a refugee in the United States at that time. And all the time that he's in the United States, he is still reporting back to his handler in North Vietnam. Mm. There are some fabulous set scenes in here. In one, the main character works as an assistant, an advisor to a movie auteur who's doing a big budget movie about the war in Vietnam, and what that movie says about Vietnam and the war there, and who's cast as the characters. So there's that piece, but it's a book that the writing is so powerful and so descriptive, and the message, you know, the situation that this character is in is just it just builds up and builds up and builds up. I mean, I just couldn't put this book down, despite how upsetting and really terrible some of what happens in the book is. And it just builds to this devastating emotional climax at the end. And it's not an easy read at all, in the sense that, you know, it's the subject matter is difficult, the writing is fabulous, which makes it even, if you will, worse, because it just makes you see that subject matter up close. But, oh, my gosh, this is an unforgettable novel.
Oh, Nancy, I love having you on the show, but you just make us want to turn off the radio. Off we go to the bookstore. It really does. All right. And why are you such a fan of first novels?
Well, I think that first novels, for me, introduce... They bring into my reading life so much promise. You know, I discover an author that I love with their I discover a book that I love and know that in a few years, I'm hoping there will be another novel by that person. There's so much hope that goes into a first novel, I think. And if you concentrate on first novels, of course you're going to find things that aren't particularly good. I mean, that certainly happens to me. But every once in a while, you find these novels that just blow you away. So these works of fiction that blow you away.
Yeah. Now, this guy sounds like a total character.
Yes.
You know who I'm going to talk about? He and his brother Nick setting off to travel the length of the Oregon Trail, 2,000 miles, six states from Missouri to Oregon, in a covered wagon with a team of mules.
Yes. So Rinker Buck, who is a journalist, I had never heard of him.
I haven't either.
But I picked him. Yeah. He would be great to interview, too, I think.
Yeah.
So he decided, he's in his 50s, and he decided that what he wanted to do was follow the Oregon Trail from St. Joseph, Missouri, basically to Astoria, Oregon, just as the pioneers did. And he didn't want to do this in his car, or a trailer or whatever. He wanted to recreate the experience of traveling by covered wagon, pulled by mules across the prairies through those states. And every year, it seems to me, I have found that there's one book that I call my go-to book that I could recommend to that I could give as a gift to almost any one of my friends because there's so much in it that would appeal to different kinds of readers or people who are interested in different things. The Hare with Amber Eyes by Edmund Duvall a few years ago was a book like that, and this year I think it's the Oregon Trail. Because Rinker Buck, I mean, if you think that Bill Bryson isn't writing fast enough for you and you love that sort of funny armchair travel, Rinker Buck is the Oregon Trail is the book for you. If what you love is American history and the pioneer era and you want to kind of understand more about what that trip across the country was like for those people, this is the book for you. And what I thought was most interesting, you know, it's this armchair travel book, but in that, you learn a lot about mules, for example. I knew nothing about mules. I mean, I knew they existed, but I mean, who knew they were introduced into America by George Washington?
So he's not only,
Yeah, not only the father of our country, but really the father of the mule industry.
That's great.
In the U.S.
I would imagine that was not an easy trip to take in 2000, whenever they did it.
No, it was not an easy trip. And what's, I think, very interesting is that many of the problems that he ran into, that Rinker Buck and his brother Nick ran into on the way, were problems that the original pioneers faced as well. So, for example, the man who sold Rinker Buck the mules neglected to give him some basic information about one of the mules who turned out to be, you know, not as happy with his chore of walking across the country as the other two mules were. The man who made the covered wagon, because he had to, you know, you just can't go into a Toyota showroom and say, I want a covered wagon. I mean, it had to be built to his specifications. And there were things that went a little wrong with that. And, you know, this is the same thing that the pioneers had to deal with. I mean, they depended on other people for their equipment. And if that failed, they were in deep trouble.
Where did he get his name? It's a great name, Rinker Buck.
I know. Isn't it a great name?
It's a great name.
Terrific. Yeah. I think he had a very interesting father. And we learn some of that at the beginning of this book as well.
Nancy Pearl is our guest, just in time for holiday giving of gifts, because she has recommendations. She has 14 recommendations. I promised to myself we'd get through all 14 during this hour, because it's a wonderful list. And what a variety of books. We've yet to get to children's books and more history and, well, a lot more coming up. Nancy knows how to choose them. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page, please leave messages there too with your favorite recommendations. And we'll put Nancy's list on the Facebook page as well, so it's all good. And that's the Kathleen Dent Show. To you momentarily, Nancy Pearl, extraordinary librarian, author of the whole Booklust series, the person who came up with the idea. I know she's had a lot of great ideas in her lifetime, but to think of the idea, what if all of Seattle read the same book? And then everybody thought, well, this is a great idea. So many cities did the same thing. To your phone calls momentarily here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl is with us now, and let's go to phone calls, Nancy. Jackie in Hillsboro, our first caller for you. Hi, Jackie. Hi, Jackie.
I actually don't have a book to recommend or anything. It was you saying that you, Nancy, you were the one that coordinated your entire community to read the same book, which is actually something I really, really want to do in my community and align it with a couple classes in our high school as well. Can you give
Terrific.
Me some pointers on book choice and anything that you could tell me would be awesome?
Well, let me just say that the American Library Association, if you go to their website, their programs office has developed a how-to guide that gives some really good suggestions and some, you know, kind of basic ABCs, that sort of thing. Basically, my suggestion is to pick a book that is absolutely discussable. You know, there are a lot of books mm-hmm. that people enjoy reading, but there's nothing to say about them. And what you want is a book that not everyone will like. I think that's another mistake, to try to choose a book that everyone will like. You want a book that some people disagree with or didn't think was the characters were particularly well drawn or whatever, because that makes the best kind of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And people have done all different kinds of books, fiction, nonfiction, old books, classics, new books. There was actually another Hillsboro in Hillsboro, Oregon, the library did this program for the community, and they did the new Go Set a Watchman.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, they did. And had, as I understand it, terrific discussions. I just talked to the director there recently.
I'm sure you've read it, Nancy. It's sitting in my house. Is it good?
You know, I have not read it.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't read it, and I have to say I have no real desire to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, it just, I just don't care.
No, I had the same feeling about it, and then I got it for a present, and I thought, oh, I got it for a present, and then the person who gave me the present said, did you read the book yet? And I said,
I know.
Oh, now I feel guilty. No, I haven't.
I know, right. Yeah, I just think it probably, in my opinion, you know, it shouldn't have been published, at least not the way it was published.
Oh, it was a terrible story, wasn't it? Oh,
yes.
Terrible
very
story.
Very sad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Jackie. I hope that is helpful, and I'm sure it is. Lynn on Facebook says, I loved All the Light We Cannot See. Was that on your list?
So All the Light We Cannot See was not on my list, but mainly because I agree it was a terrific book and, of course, won all sorts of prizes. And it's not on my list because I feel like if everybody already knows about a book, I don't need to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. So then, of course.
But I was going to say, but Anthony Doerr has a new collection of short stories out as well that the Facebook commenter might like to look at as also.
Okay, children's book. You include those, The Highly Trained Dogs of Professor Pettit.
Petite.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I believe.
Petite. I don't know about that book.
No. It could be petted, actually. So this is one of the books that that we reprinted this year. It was originally published in 1953. The author, Carol Ryrie Brink, is best known for her book, Caddy Woodlawn, which won the Newbery Award. But she wrote many other children's books. And one of my favorites is this one, The Highly Trained Dogs of Professor Petite. It's set in the middle of the 19th century in a small town called Pudling Center. And Willie, the boy who's the hero of this book, makes friends with a man named Professor Petite, who travels with his five highly trained dogs and puts on these amazing shows with these amazing dogs. But at the same time that Professor Petite is getting ready to do a show in Pudling Center, a rival show comes along, and Hulk Hogan, who runs that rival show, is advertising that there's going to be a tiger who jumps through a flaming hoop, and Hulk Hogan also has a dog named Brutus. Now, a crime is committed. Some sheep have been killed, and the only being who knows who did that killing is one of Professor Petite's dogs named Sancho, who actually can spell. So this is a perfect book for, it's a wonderful book to read aloud, but it also is short enough, and the chapters are short enough, that a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old can certainly enjoy reading this book on their own.
Oh, it sounds delightful. Nice. The next one to me sounded really intriguing. I don't know if it's so scary that I would be scared, but it just sounds like it has many layers. The Strangler Vine?
It does.
Yeah.
The Strangler Vine, yes, by MJ Carter, is the first of a series. The second one will be out in 2016. But The Strangler Vine is set in the middle of the 19th century in India. And a British officer is a young, very young British officer, is assigned to accompany one of the Foreign Office spies, actually, who has been in India for a long time and has essentially gone native. He doesn't live in the British compound. He had an Indian wife. And the two of them are sent on this mission to find a missing British writer. And this takes them all over India. And at the same time, we as readers find out about so much about what India was like, what the occupation by the British was like at that time. And it does, for me, the two things that I most love in mysteries. It's a really good mystery. The main characters are great. They're kind of one of those mismatched couples who have to work together. And at the same time, you just learn so much. And that, for me, makes a mystery ideal. This one I thought was really special. And it's not too scary. It's not too yucky at all, because I don't have a high tolerance for that.
Okay. Oh, that sounds good.
Yes.
Let's see. Jenny says she's reading Dog Whistle Politics by Ian Haney Lopez. Do you know that one?
I do not.
I don't either. All right. Well, thank you, though, for the suggestion, Jenny.
Yes.
And Mike in Eau Claire, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Going back to the government line, there's Perfidia by James Ellroy. I know that came out at the end of 2014, but it starts out right at Pearl Harbor. Actually, the day before Pearl Harbor, there's a murder, and then the next day is the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And the family that gets murdered just happens to be Japanese.
Huh.
And then it turns out that they're actually on the list held by the FBI. You know, like the number, like the A list of families to be in for the internment.
So I find out
what they meant by the fifth column. And I don't know if you're familiar with James Ellroy, the police officers, they're always a lot of them are really corrupt and just really bad people. So a few of them on there, they're gonna profit from the from the internment, like confiscating their assets. And I liked it, though. I loved it. I thought it was really good. I love James Ellroy and his little his L.A. Quartet, and then the Underworld Trilogy. It's a whole new L.A. Quartet now. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but...
Yes. Oh, go ahead, Kathleen. Sorry.
No, you go ahead, Nancy.
Oh, I was gonna say that James Ellroy you have to be, from my perspective, you have to be in a certain mood to read him. I mean, it's really, if I'm in my most cynical moods, which happens fairly frequently, James Ellroy is an author that I would go to. He's great, and more people should read him.
Great. All right, so now my perennial question to you, and I don't think he's listening, but you have never made a mistake when I ask, what do I give my husband who reads avidly and has every book imaginable on Stalingrad? We need to get him going somewhere else. So he likes, you know, I've said this before, but he likes John Le Carré kinds of things. So along those lines?
Okay, there's a book, one of the adult books that we republished called The Soul of Victor Tronco.
Okay.
And that's Victor with a K.
Okay.
And then Tronco, T-R-O-N-K-O, which is based on, it's a novel by David Quammen, who went on to is now, you know, sort of nationally recognized as one of the great natural history writers. But he wrote two works of fiction at the beginning of his writing career, and this was one of them. And it's based on a real event in Cold War history, when a spy basically defected from Russia, came to the United States, said all sorts of very interesting things, and then said, but there's going to be somebody who's going to defect a month after me, and he's going to say everything I told you was wrong. And the FBI, and then the CIA, led by James Angleton, had to decide which one to believe. And so this is based on that, but just goes off. It's a wonderful, wonderful spy novel.
It sounds like I'd like it.
Yeah, and it's the closest to John Le Carré, I think.
Nice.
You know, the writing is really good, and the characters are, you know, it's all that sort of Wilderness of Mirrors kind of stuff that I love. So that's a perfect book.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
And the name again is The Soul?
The Soul, S-O-U-L, of Victor Tronco by Quammen, Quammen.
Excellent. Oh, Nancy, you've made my holiday shopping so much easier. Thank you. And thanks, good, Mike, for your call. Tom in Wanakee. Hi.
Well, I was just calling, Kathleen, regarding the Oregon Trail book. It was, as I mentioned to the screener, that it was a chapter a day selection just recently.
Oh, yes.
And just listening to that, I've put the request in for to the library for, you know, on reserve, but it just brought to mind how every time I hear or read something like this, you wonder how in the world, back in the day, they ever made it across from east to west in this country. You know, it's just so intriguing, and I'm looking forward to reading the book also.
Oh, I think you'll love the book. Yeah. And you know, what always we have to keep in mind is that many of those people didn't make it. You know, one of the things Rick Erbuck talks about is, you know, the graves that you can see. And he did just what the pioneers did. You know, as they went along, their wagons, they, you know, were too heavy to get up those mountains, and they would lighten, you know, they would throw things out. And that's what he had to do, as well as, you know, started off with a bunch of things like a set of Calphalon cookware and a shoe shine, you know, kit, and, you know, got rid of all of that.
Thanks, Tom, very much. I think both of us like space, and this next one was intriguing to me. Margaret Lazarus Dean, Leaving Orbit, Notes from the Last Days of American Spaceflight.
Yeah, I love this book. And it was published by Gray Wolf Press, small publisher in Minnesota. And I don't think enough people know about it. But Margaret Dean was always fascinated by spaceflight, and kind of grew up with the beginning, the Mercury program, and then certainly through what she would talk about as the last days of American spaceflight. And you know, I think her reason for writing this book is that the beginnings of American spaceflight were really chronicled by three writers, an Italian writer named Oriana Fallaci, of course, Tom Wolfe, mm-hmm. His wonderful book, and Norman Mailer wrote a book about the Mercury program and the Mercury astronauts. But nobody's written about the end, now that the shuttle program is basically shut down, that when we send people to the International Space Station, they're going to have to go to Russia and they're going to travel to the space station on Russian spacecraft. So this is a book about the history of NASA and the history of American spaceflight. It's beautifully written. Mm. I think that I learned so much about this, and Margaret Lazarstein teaches creative nonfiction in Tennessee, and she really, you come to understand why she loves this so much. And one of the things that I thought was so interesting about this is that she, it's not just, oh, isn't this wonderful? I feel so fortunate to be here. I mean, she really talks about basic issues that NASA had to contend with. And one of the things she says, one of the things, I wrote this down, it was so interesting to me, four warring interests in spaceflight. If you're going to talk about if you're going to talk about reinvigorating the space, our attempts to go to Mars, to go to the moon, whatever, mm-hmm. you have to contend with these four interests, and they're contradictory. Ambitiousness of vision, mm-hmm. urgency of the timetable, the reduction of cost, because what Congress was really urging NASA to do is cut costs. And then after the Challenger disaster, after each disaster, what became more important was than almost anything else was the safety of mm-hmm. the astronauts. Mm-hmm. So all of those come into play. Mm-hmm. And it's just a book. It's surprising that no one wrote this book before mm-hmm. she did, because there was so much excitement about the beginning and so little news or really anything mm-hmm. That reached the popular press, I think, mm-hmm. at the end.
Oh, that sounds good. The story, I love this stuff, too. And that story that broke this year, Nancy, which I'm sure fascinated you, this finding of this star with this unusual shaped
yes.
object. And then they thought, and it was legitimate people, legitimate physics professors, et cetera, who thought this might be a civilization that was using it for energy. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, it stops
right.
you in your tracks. And
it
you
does.
Think, send them money. Get a telescope
yeah.
there. Let us see what in the world this is.
Yeah, we sort of take the Hubble telescope for granted, I
know.
Think most people do. But, I mean, what it's brought us, the knowledge that it's brought us, is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and the pictures, oh, yeah.
And the pictures,
oh,
right.
Beautiful. Carol in Hudson. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for putting me on the show. I'm a huge fan of Margaret Atwood, and I think one of the few that can stomach all her orc and crake and find it fascinatingly hideous. But her newest book is something different, and I wish people would try it. It's called The Heart Goes Last, and I'll tell you, you start reading it and you think, oh, she's lost it. Where, what is she getting into? And then you realize it clicks in, and I'm not going to give anything else away. It is extremely entertaining.
Hmm.
And I can't praise enough. She's such a fantastic writer, and I absolutely loved it. I've actually read it twice, and it just came out. So
wow.
I recommend it. Give her another try,
know.
People.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call. Nancy, were you going to respond? Have you read it?
No. Okay. I have not read it. I agree, Margaret Atwood. I mean, I love so much of Margaret Atwood, but Oryx and Crake and sequels pretty much did me in.
Hmm. Right.
So, but you know, the caller was so enthusiastic, and I always appreciate that. That makes me think maybe I better go try it out.
Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour, and we're getting book recommendations. Her favorite reads from 2015. There are 14 on her list, and we've made it through a few, not all 14 yet, but we'll get there eventually. You also may want to go to our Facebook page and write down the books that you are reading. We'd love to read those. And if you like us, Scotty's going to write a web article tonight, so you'll be able to read through the list of books from Nancy, too, because we don't want you to be thinking, I didn't get the name of that book. What was the name of it? So that's how you can get it. And we'll list them all, too, at that location. Like to join us on air with your favorite read or questions about any on Nancy's list? We would love to hear from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl is with us this hour, and we go back to phone calls. Mary in Belleville. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
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 I wanted to say that Ann Patchett is one of my favorite authors, and I'm the kind of person, I use the library, and I'll go out and buy a book after I've read it, and I know that I want to own it. And her book, State of Wonder, was one of those for me. I absolutely love that book, and so I wanted to read more of her, and I just finished Bel Canto yesterday. And again, that was a wonderful book as well.
Yeah, you know, I just recently reread her novel Run, which I don't know if you've read already, but I she just is such a wonderful, wonderful writer, and I know that she's in the midst of finishing up a new book. So we do have something to look forward to, if not in 2016, then 2017, I believe.
That's good. She can't write fast enough for me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Moving on.
Okay.
Where are we?
I'll do these faster.
All right. Ruth Downey.
Okay, Ruth Downey, this is another historical mystery. It's a part of a series. It's number 6 in the series about a medic, a doctor, Gaius Russo, set in 122 AD, this particular book, when Hadrian's Wall is being constructed. Again, you don't have to read. This is one of those mystery series you don't have to read in order. You could pick up any one of them, and you'll enjoy it. You get enough of the backstory each time to so you know where you are. But basically, you're in Roman Britain with this doctor who is married to, he's a Roman, a Roman citizen married to a native woman. And so you get both sides of that. Roman Britain, the Celts and the Picts and the Anglos, all of that. They're great. I just really love them.
Good.
And
No, go ahead.
No. I want us to get through these two.
All right. Wendy and Eau Claire. Hi, Wendy.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about the Oregon Trail book. I am the great-great-granddaughter of pioneers who left Elkhorn, Wisconsin in 1852. And took the California road to Placerville, California.
Oh.
And they wrote a journal, which we have. And these two guys literally lived my dream. I grew up sleeping in one of the beds that was in their wagon and wanted to be a pioneer so badly. So this book was just outstanding for me and my family because it's always been a dream of ours. We've done it with a camper, but it's not the same as being able to follow the actual wagon rut.
Right.
Thank you.
That was my comment. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for your call. All right. We got to plow ahead here, Ms. Nancy Pearl. So we're on this one.
Crooked Heart by Yalissa Evans. She's a British writer. This is the first of her books published in America. I'm hoping we get a lot more. This is set during World War II, the Blitz in London, and a young boy, 10-year-old Noel, is sent, you know, they sent the children out of London, basically, to say, you know, because they were convinced London was going to be bombed, as it was, as it turned out that it would be. But he goes to live with a woman named Vera. And Vera is somebody who always has a con going. She always is trying to get money illegally, but she's not someone who thinks through things very much. And Noel is a very serious young boy who thinks through things a lot. And the two of them together make a kind of formidable pair. And what's wonderful about this novel, the writing is great, but what's wonderful is the way these two very unlikely people form a bond, a kind of mother-son bond. This is a book that, this is a book I think people would really enjoy.
Thank you, Nancy. I want to tell you this story of what happened when I read this, you know, interview that Obama did with Marilynne Robinson from the
yes.
And I thought, oh, we should have Marilynne Robinson on. So we had her on a few weeks ago, and I got her books, and I was trying to read through her essays, which are incredibly dense. I mean, the references, she knows everything. The references, she's like you, to everything.
Right.
I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this interview? But I was wondering, so I got her novels thinking I'm going to read through all of this, and it was hard enough to get through the essays, so I went mostly with the interview that she had with Obama, and she was perfectly charming. But I was wondering,
yes.
as I was reading her, what you think about her, and particularly what you think about Gilead.
I've always been a Marilynne Robinson fan,
and
yes, and one of my favorite books of all time is Housekeeping,
is it?
Which was
oh,
her yes.
Yeah, okay.
Have you did you read
no,
that?
No, I haven't read it.
Okay, so Housekeeping was made into a movie, but the book is far superior. Oh my gosh, it's a terrific, terrific novel, and so I was very excited when she started writing fiction again because it's been a number of years in between Gilead and Housekeeping. I think Marilynne Robinson is such a wonderful writer.
Mm.
I mean, I think it's those are not they're never going to be widely popular because they're not fast paced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take a while to read, and partly because you want to absorb the prose because it's so, so beautiful.
Mm.
So I'm a huge Marilynne Robinson fan.
Thank you. Okay, good. I'll be on it then over the holidays. Mary in Stevens Point, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm actually like an avid historical fiction Civil War period reader, but I need some advice. I read every night. I read like almost a book every other day.
Wow.
But I know. But my teenage nephew, he's about 13 years old. He cannot seem to kind of find his niche in life. He's tried different things. I do know he likes history. Every time I go around him, he listens to me and I tell him all kinds of different facts about different things, and he's very interested in learning things like that. And I was wondering if you had any recommendations for maybe a book for a kid around, you know, past the tween age, not quite into like the 16 area, and kind of not quite sure what he likes in life, but kind of has a thing for history.
Oh, I bet okay. he does.
So there is a new book, newish book, 2015, a graphic history of the Civil War, which tells the the story of the Civil War in pictures, in like a graphic novel, in pictures and prose. That was just a fabulous book, and it certainly has no lower age range. I mean, you know, if you're interested in history, that might be a really good one. Another great graphic biography is one about Steve Jobs.
Hmm.
And oh my gosh, it's so good.
Hmm.
So I think if you Google graphic biography Steve Jobs, you'll come up with that book. It was published in 2015. Absolutely wonderful.
Hmm.
Historical fiction for that age, if this is a reader who is willing to forego a fast-moving plot, read a book that is not a page-turner. The novels by Rosemary Sutcliffe, particularly a book called Dawn Wind, and kind of the books that are set around the King Arthur, that period in British history, those books would be absolutely wonderful as well.
They are good. I have read some of those. And while we're now let's talk about younger girls. You also will give recommendations for young adult novels, and single carefree mellow falls in that category.
Well, actually not.
Oh, it does.
I would not say I would say this is really for adults,
and
a collection. Yeah, it's a collection of short stories, and I always joke that I am neither single nor carefree nor mellow. God knows. And I'm the totally wrong demographic for this, because this is about young women in their 20s, these short stories. Yet I loved this book, and I loved it for you know, it's kind of humor, although it's not a funny book, you know, but the kind of little twists in it. The thing with short stories all written by the same author is that you don't want to read them one after another. You don't want to read it like a novel. You want to read a short story, wait a couple of days, and then come back to it, because you don't want the voices to blur in your mind. Mm. And I think that I loved this book. I loved this collection of short stories.
Mm. So she has done other short stories. Is that how I got mixed up for younger people?
No, this is her first collection.
Oh. All right.
Yeah.
Great.
Weird, huh?
So you love this one. All right. So we marked
this one. I love
this
collection.
Nancy loved single, carefree, and mellow.
Right.
All right. Mary, thanks for your call. Cheryl in Verona. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm looking for a gift for my daughter-in-law, who's a naturalist, and a book that was recommended to me for her was called H is for Hawk.
Yes.
And I haven't heard of that book. Other than one single recommendation, I was wondering if you're familiar with it.
Yes, I am. I think that H is for Hawk is an absolutely wonderful memoir, and it combines kind of natural history, a look at T.H. White's The Sword and the Stone, that whole Arthurian thing, and it's a book about grief, because she's writing this book after her beloved father died, and she gets a young hawk to train. So that's one book that I really would recommend. I think that'd be a beautiful, beautiful present for your daughter-in-law. Another great book about natural history is called The Invention of Nature by a woman named Andrea Wolff, W-U-L-F-F, I believe, two Fs. And it's the story of this fascinating man named Alexander von Humboldt, who never could settle down to one thing that he was interested in, but just gave so much to the history, our history of science and what we know about the natural world. Because of his kind of, you know, just would travel everywhere, would climb any mountain, would dig up anything in the 1800s. Mm. So those two books would be great. But I think for your daughter-in-law, the one that I would go with is H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald.
Thank you, Cheryl, for the call. Fred on Facebook says, Nancy, a book I read this year out of the 45 or so was The Buried Giant by Ishiguro. At 74 years, it spoke volumes to me about memory, love, and the value of remembering or not remembering the past. That sounds lovely, huh?
Well, I think that's a terrific description of the book. This book did not work for me.
Hmm.
That's a terrific description of the book. What didn't work for me was Ishiguro's writing, which just really, you know, his kind of authorial tics. You know, like when he would talk about, I think he called his wife princess in every single sentence, the main character, in every single sentence. So I couldn't even get to the meat of the book because I was so annoyed by the writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know writing is important to you. We have a minute left. We're not going to get to all the books. They'll have to go to our Facebook page or Scotty's article, but pick your favorite out of the ones that are left.
Okay, let's do Murdstone Trilogy by Malpeet. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Funny, interesting. You don't know where to shelve it in the library because is it science fiction? Is it, you know, mainstream fiction? But basically, it's about a writer who has had great success writing books for teenage boys, and then his agent tells him those books aren't selling anymore. What he really needs to write is a fantasy a la The Lord of the Rings. And he realizes he can't do that at all, and he gets drunk and climbs this, you know, hill by his house, and there he meets a Greem, that's G-R-E-M-E, named Pocket Welfare, who offers to write that book for him in exchange for an amulet that he does not yet have.
Oh, Nancy.
And so it goes from there.
Nancy, your interests are so wide-ranging, it's amazing to me. You even made me, who would not be at all interested in a book like that, interested in reading it. You're
it's
amazing.
It's so wonderful. Yeah, it's so wonderful.
It sounds good. Well, this was so much fun. Thank you ever so much. Happiest of holidays to you, and I hope to see you again sometime soon.
I know that would be lovely to see each other again.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Nancy Pearl, if you didn't get the whole list, please don't call us because otherwise we won't get anything else done today. But we are putting it on our Facebook page. Scotty is writing an article about this. So if you like our Facebook page, which you should anyhow, then you'll always know what we're talking about because there's so many good topics, the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we will post the list and those that we didn't get to from Nancy Pearl as well. So that's coming up. Thanks very much, Nancy Pearl. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this very interesting program, and to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Thank you so much for listening, and happy, happy reading.